Hi, everybody. So glad you're here. All right. So before we jump in for today, just wanted to remind you that you all have a special gift spot in a 3-hour workshop that I'm holding tomorrow. And I'd love for you to be there if it fits with your schedule and it feels like something you want to do. It's all about looking at the shadow of jealousy and envy and how it plays out in our lives and different ways of working with those energies. One of the reasons why I love that class in particular is because we look through a little bit of a Jungian lens and an archetypal lens at the Cinderella story. We get to kind of pick it apart in really deep and beautiful and meaningful ways and see how it lives through us. And so also just if you are a practitioner who is working with archetypal energy, particularly in your groups, it's definitely an interesting example of how to use some like archetypal exercises in your classes. So I hope you'll join me for that if it's right for you. Today we are moving forward in our breakthrough questioning module. Last week we looked at kind of foundational principles around questions and what makes good questions. And today's class, we're going to look at different types and categories of questions and why each of those categories are effective in which situations, why we might ask those types of questions in what kinds of situations. As we move through the rest of the program, as I said last week, we're going to keep on coming back to questions and questioning sequences based on different topics that we're looking at. So this is just kind of another step forward in that direction. Today's class is a little bit different than most of our training classes in the sense of we're not doing a lot of inner inquiry today. I don't have self-exploration questions for you. Today's class is kind of more on the surface. We're going to be looking at the content. What are these different types of questions? And it's almost like I'm giving you a salad bar of options when it comes to questions. It is a lot of information that we're looking at today, and this is really important. You're not meant to integrate it all by the end of our call today. You will start to get stressed out about 10 minutes in if you think like you're just supposed to like take it and then know it and master it and be done with it. Today's call is like an opening up around these things. And then my invitation to you is to pick 2 or 3 different categories at a time to be thinking about in your sessions. The way to integrate is through practice, right? And so pick a few things to practice on. And then after those 3, pick another 3. The other thing about all of this that I will share with you is that when I first started coaching, the first 6 to 9 months of my coaching career, I found a list online of, I don't know, it was like the 50 most common coaching questions. And I printed it out and I had it at my desk for every single session. I personally needed it there. It was a crutch for me. It was like a safety hatch. I was so scared that I wouldn't be able to think of the right question to ask in a session, or that I would go blank or whatever it is, that it felt very safe for me to have that list of questions there. As it came to pass, I didn't often look at the list of questions, but sometimes I did, you know, or I would review them beforehand, or, you know, and then sometimes I would glance over. Overall, psychologically, and then I think some, when it came to the actual questions, it was helpful for me. So I share this with you, particularly if you're just starting out. You'll have a couple of handouts in your member center. There is one with common coaching questions in there that I've put in, and then the material that we're looking at in class today. If it feels right for you, print that out. Have those questions with you in your sessions. Use whatever aids are going to be helpful for you to build the questioning muscle and to help you feel as regulated as possible in your sessions, right? And as present as possible in your sessions. And not to mention, the more you kind of look at the words, they do integrate as well. Now, if you are a seasoned practitioner, I want to invite you to pay special attention to our class today. Sometimes when we are seasoned, we can get into a rut with the questions that we ask. We kind of can start asking the same questions over and over in sessions. And they're probably very good questions. Don't stop using your go-to questions if they work. But that being said, it's really valuable to always kind of add to your toolbox, to have a variety of techniques, of questions, of processes at your fingertips. So if you're seasoned, you're going to see a lot of questions that we go over today that you're already using regularly. Great. And then pick some categories to add to your repertoire as well. All right. So all that being said, let's jump in. There are many, many different categories of questions. We're going to cover a lot today, but it's not an exhaustive list. But these are some of my favorites. So the first category I call, am I getting that right? Questions. Am I getting that right? Questions. And we've actually already reviewed this in a way in our creating awareness module. But I'm bringing it up again here because repetition is good. So you want to use an am I getting that right question after you've reflected back to a client or mirrored something to a client. So for example, I'm hearing X, right? Whatever X is based on what you heard they just said. Am I getting that right? Or it sounds like you're saying, why am I hearing that correctly? Or as you were just speaking, I could almost sense Z. You know, I could almost sense something coming alive in you. I could almost sense your inner bird, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is, right? As you were just speaking, I could almost sense Z. Am I getting that right? Right. So we're using this question after we've reflected, created awareness to support a client to see what's resonating, what's not, and help them more deeply integrate or get to the next awareness on it. I'll pause. I'll do like three categories at a time, and then I'll pause for thoughts and questions. Next category is what I call definition questions. These can be really powerful. So you might think you know what a client means when they use a certain term or talk about a certain concept, but you don't always want to make assumptions. you as the practitioner might actually be working with a different definition than what your client is working with. So it's important sometimes to ask. Also, it can be very valuable for a client to define a term that they've used, because they might be using a term and not even have full awareness of what they mean by it, right? So asking, you know, if a client uses the like a term like freedom or family or romantic relationship or success or balance, asking them to define it is a way of creating more awareness of what they want from it, what they don't want from it, how they understand it, and it can help connect dots for the client. So some example of definition questions are, what does X mean to you, right? What does success mean to you? Or define Y, define freedom. Or explain Z a little more. Explain success a little more, or tell me more about. Here's another kind of definition question that can be really powerful. How is X different than Y? For example, how is space in your schedule different than space in your mind or body, right? Let's say a client is talking about wanting more space and they're talking about their time, right? How is space in your schedule different than space in your mind or body? Or how is self-trust different than self-confidence, right? If that seems important to the context that you're looking about, what's the difference between service and servitude, right? If you see a client really values service, but the way that they are showing up in their business is like servitude towards their clients, right? So asking to define two terms kind of in comparison to each other. All right, I'll do one more category and then we'll pause for a moment. Clarifying current situation questions. So you want to use a clarifying the current situation question to gather more details on a situation that a client is talking about, both for yourself as the practitioner, if you need some more details about what the client is talking about, as well as so that the client can have more awareness of their situation. Now, here's the thing that's tricky about clarifying current situation questions. You want to make sure, and we looked at this a little bit last week, right? Part of where questions come from is curiosity, but you want to make sure that you're not asking for more details just because you've gotten like too curious or like a little gossipy or right. It's always with the tracking of the intentions and the bigger goals in mind. Is the question that you're asking going to help provide more information, more awareness, and more next steps towards the goal? So examples of this type of question can be, well, what exactly did she say during the team meeting? Right? If a client is saying that their team leader was really angry at them at the meeting. How exactly did that date go very badly? When you say that nobody signed up to work with you, tell me more about that. All right. And I might, in a situation like that, I might stack. I said last week, not stacking, but something like that, I might give some examples. So I might say, when nobody signed up, tell me a little bit more about that. Is it that there wasn't any interest at all? Is it that you had some sales conversations, but they didn't work out? You know, let's get some more details on what nobody signed up or there was no interest means. Here's some other examples. There's so many more. You know, just tell me a little bit more about, right? If there's a part of something. Here's another interesting clarifying the current situation question. What about the situation are you overlooking? Right? Or what about the situation didn't you just share that might be important? What was your intention when you canceled that doctor's appointment? Right? Intentions can be part of, understanding intentions can be part of clarifying the situation. All right, let me pause there. So far we've looked at, am I getting that right questions, definition questions, clarifying current situation questions. I'd love to hear either what questions you have on any of it so far, or what's resonating for you, or what's seeming important, or what are you noticing about questioning as we're moving through this so far? So thoughts on any of the particular categories or anything else that's coming up? Marla.
I don't know if this fits into what you're asking, but I use definition questions and clarifying the situation questions. And sometimes I get pushback or resistance. So for instance, if someone says they want to feel safe in a certain situation or heard, what does being heard mean? How do you feel heard? And I think what happened, and I don't know, I'll back off because it seems like you get into, but maybe that's not, maybe there's a better way, but it almost seems like they don't really know how they would feel heard, for example. And so they just get really like frustrated and feel like they feel cornered. I almost feel like, who knows? Mm-hmm. And the same thing with clarifying questions. I mean, I have trouble following stories. So especially when someone starts using pronouns like he did this or she did, I'm like, well, who's he? You know what I mean? And, or I'm just asking questions and I'm not sure where it's going to go. And they're like, why are you asking me these questions? Because they don't see, and maybe I do see where it's going. Maybe I don't, because sometimes you don't, right? And so anyway, I get pushback in different situations and I just like, okay, I'll find another way in, but I don't know, maybe there's something better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all. I'm so glad you're bringing it up. So a couple, I'm going to work kind of backwards. A couple of things come to mind. So first, just because this is an easy fix, I'll start with that first. If you know that you have like it, that you sometimes, who is he or, you know, who is she, that thing, yeah. I would pre-qualify that with clients before it comes up. I mean, I would say just in your first session, as you're kind of getting started and grounded, here's just one thing that I want you to know about me and how I follow stories is sometimes when you say a lot of he or a lot of she, I'll be asking you who you're referring to because sometimes it's hard for me to understand, right? And just that kind of restating it, it's not going to help every single situation, but then it's like, it's just baked in.
Yeah. I mean, I do that in the moment, but.
Yeah. I think just if it's something that comes up a lot and people get upset about, that would be my recommendation for that.
Not a lot. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If it's not a lot, then it doesn't matter. So then in terms of the resistance, you know, in each situation, fortunately and unfortunately, it's going to, right? Because always coach the what based on the who. There's not one size fits all to, you know, like handling resistance to questions in a moment. So in the situations where you're asking clarifying questions and a client is resistant because they want to know the intention, I think that's fair. I would say that's a fair question on the client's part. And it's actually a good foundational principle for questioning, maybe not every single time, But as much as possible, try to understand why you're asking a question before you ask it. What is the intention? And so what I'd say, Marla, for you is if that's not happening a lot, that would be a great thing to work on and build the muscle on this week, to set the intention before you go into session saying, I'm only going to ask questions if I'm clear enough in my mind, my intention on the question. Or after a session, go back and, you know, during a session, write down some of the questions you're asking. And then afterwards, go back and say, what was my intention for those questions? That would, I think, be good practice. In terms of resistance around, well, what would it feel like to be heard? That's more, we might be getting into resistance archetype territory with some of that. Again, it depends on the person, and we'll get to resistance archetypes, you know, at some later on. But what I'll say is sometimes resistance in that sense can be because the person really wants to feel heard, but then it doesn't feel safe, right? Because that's not part of their patterning so far. So then getting into more of this, well, what would it feel like to be heard, or what would it look like, can cause some, now that's not gonna be true for every client, right? I say coach the what based on the who, but you wanna kind of be thinking about, okay, why is the resistance, right? And you can even ask that. You can say, you know, I notice that question, kind of, you don't want to go there with that question, which, by the way, we don't have to if it's not right for you. But would it be okay? I think it would be valuable for us to just spend a moment to take a look at, what is it about that question that you don't want to answer, right? So that's not going to be the case in all scenarios, but you want to always work. This is important. I want everyone to hear this. Any answer or reaction or response from a client is great information for the practitioner, right? We don't want to like get scared of it or have our energetics get off by it or be like, oh, well, that was just the wrong thing to say, oh, my part to say, right? I'm gonna be like, oh, curiosity. Ooh, there might be information in that, right? And work with our client to mine that information for their benefit. Is that helpful for
now? Very, very, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. Okay, Kavita is asking in the chat, how do you know if you're being too inquisitive? And she says, I think I sometimes get too casual and chatty with questions, and I would love guideposts. I love that question. Kavita, are you able to come on voice to voice for a moment?
Yeah, I can come on voice. I just don't want to be on video right
That's
now.
That's completely fine. Because I want to ask a clarifying question, clarifying the current situation.
Sure.
Can you share with us a little bit about some examples of when you think you've gotten too casual and chatty, or an example of what that would be?
I don't have like a specific recent example that pops up, but what happens in conversation is like, I enjoy what they're talking about. And then I might forget for a moment that I'm in a coaching role and get too friend-like, yes. Right? And yes. Then, and I didn't realize I was doing that until you began to frame some of this the way you began to frame it. So it's so new a realization.
Yes.
Like I don't have a good example, but I feel like, and I do ask a lot of questions. I'm an intensely curious person. I sometimes wonder if I over ask questions. And so I'm just like, I love people. I love knowing things about them. And I feel like that may take over, and that's not in the best interest of the client, because their intention is not just for me to get to know them.
Yes.
You know? So yeah. You don't understand what I'm saying? It's a managing energy in myself more than a specific situation, because anytime somebody starts talking about something, I want to ask 50 questions because I want to know everything about it and I want to take it apart. And as a friend, that's great. But if we're in a coaching situation and we're trying to get to an intention, I could spend 15 minutes asking about irrelevant things.
Yeah, good. Okay, this is great. So first of all, yay about this awareness that just came up, because that's huge. And I think you actually answered your own question it seems to me, based on what you're sharing, that the guidepost is this question coming from the friend in me, or is this question coming from the practitioner in me? And I know that that's like, you may not, as you start to ask that, you, that may not always be clear. It's going to take some tracking. But I think part of what can help with that, so I would ask that question before you, if you notice you've like asked three quick questions and you're all into the details, I would pause. I would tell me if this makes sense. I would move into the energy of back into the energy of practitioner, friendly practitioner, but you know, maybe there's like an energy of friend, move back into the energy of practitioner, and then ask yourself, is that question coming from this energy? And then the second question to ask with it is, will, do I sense that the answer to that question will support my client in reaching their intentions for this session?
Yeah.
How does all of that land for you?
No, it lands really well. And I think that it just makes sense now that I have this awareness, because as you were describing it all, I just, I noticed like, wow, I think I'm doing something that's off. And then I felt really badly. So
don't feel badly. You're already a great practitioner, and now you're tweaking the next pieces of it. You would have heard from your clients if it just absolutely wasn't serving. This is just like tweaking the next pieces.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. They haven't complained, but I think that it's one of those situations where they don't know what they're missing because I haven't taken them there. And yes, it's good enough, but it's not great. And that's what I just realized. And I realized like how you can make it a lot more potent by keeping the questions, you know, focused on the intention, which you're not doing with a friend, you're just casually chatting. And so it's the not letting myself get to that casual place and remaining focused. This is really helpful. Thank you.
I'm so glad. Good. Jessica is saying in the chat, so very important that each person in the conversation is on the same definition of a word or concept. Yes. I'm so glad you're underlining that, Jessica. Yes. And Juniper too is saying, become more aware of the definition questions. Yes. Good. All right, let's keep on going. Helen, I saw your hand up and I don't know if your question got answered or, If you just wanted to wait on it. I'm going to keep on going, but I want to hear from you, Helen, and everyone. So we'll open back up for more cues in a little bit. All right. We are going to do a whole module on visioning. There's a lot to say about visioning and visioning questions. But for now, I'll just share, you want to consider using a visioning question in a couple of different types of moments for a client. So yes, for sure, at the beginning of a new creative idea or a new project or a new incentive, you want to work on visioning. But there are other moments where you want to ask visioning questions as well. So if you are working with a client and you see that something for them needs to change, a situation, a project, a relationship, a habit, et cetera, you might want to ask a visioning question. If you see that there's a certain issue that needs to be resolved or seen in a different way and from a different perspective, that's a good moment for a visioning question as well. If you sense that a client is ready for expansion, right? And not all moments are moments for expansion. There are some moments for maintenance. There are some moments for pulling in, right? And contraction. And then there are some moments for expansion. And all of those are very valuable states of being and phases, right? But if a client is ready for expansion, that's a good moment for some visioning questions as well. So many different types of examples, but I'll just name a few for now. You have a lot on your handout. What would it look like if, right? What would it look like if you owned your own business, if you found a perfect home, etc.? I like this next question a lot for if something needs to change. If you could change one thing about X, right, whatever the situation is, what would it be? Because sometimes a client will come to you and it's like everything is wrong about the thing and they hate it. And it's like a big blob of ick, right? And maybe it is, maybe everything about it is wrong and it just needs to be let go. But maybe it's just that one or two things need to be tweaked. And so asking a question like that can support a client to create awareness and start to untangle the threads to see what actually needs to be changed. If you could change one thing about X, what would it be? Here's another question that I really like. It's such a beautiful visioning question. If you could have this any way you want, how would you have it? The reason why I love it is because very rarely in life are we asked if we could have something any which way that we want it, right? We're not given permission to vision in those ways. What would the best possible outcome look like here? What would you like to have happen here? What do you see for this situation if you were to step out of the box or look outside the lines? What would be possible here? Do you see how these are visioning, right? It supports a client to not only see vision, but to see from different perspectives on what something could be, on what something could look like. In order to create anything in our lives, we want to have a sense of what the possibilities for it are first. How we think it is at the beginning of execution might turn out very different, right, than by the time we're done. But being able to vision, to see possibilities, to see expanded possibilities, to see how we really want something, to see and name how we want something to change are oftentimes first steps towards creating and working towards it. That makes sense? Okay. So next category are feeling questions. And I'm going to take a step back first for a moment. One thing that I wanted to share last week that I didn't have time to, that relates to this, is when we think about asking, you know, when we are crafting a question, when we think about a question that we want to ask a client, one thing that can be helpful is to have in our awareness in the session overall with the questions that we're asking, are we activating more than one level of learning and processing, what I call a level of learning and processing? So I like to teach that there are four levels of learning and processing that we want to try to activate when we're working with a client. Not all four have to happen in one session, but more than one. I like to recommend more than one does. And here are the four levels of learning and processing. The first is the cognitive or the intellectual or the mental level of learning and processing, right? So are we asking questions or creating awareness so that the client has a cognitive understanding of the situation, of how they're feeling, of what they want the next steps to be, of what their beliefs are, of what their fears are, right? Do they intellectually understand? Most practitioners stop at this level of learning and processing. They're only working on the cognitive. I want to suggest that we go deeper than that. The cognitive, and especially me and almost everyone in our society, we rely on our brains a lot, right? So the cognitive is very, very important. We want those intellectual understandings, but we don't only want the brain involved for true learning and change, transformation to happen. So we want to think about, are the questions that we're asking or the reflections that we're making, are they also activating sometimes the heart level of learning and processing, the emotional level? Is it supporting a client to feel what their emotion is in any particular situation? Supporting a client to feel what their heart or their emotions are feeling gives the topic at hand more weight, more resonance, more meaning, right? There's more motivation to either to change or to move forward. The third level of learning and processing that we want to think about, you know, have we been activating it, is what I call the spirit level of learning and processing. Now, you don't have to be religious or believe in God to connect with the spirit level of learning and processing. Spirit can be God, but it can be higher power, inner wisdom, ancestor energy, earth wisdom, etc. You know, what my great grandmother Agatha might think, right? It's when I say spirit, what I mean is, have we supported our client to connect with wisdom that is bigger than their ego? Have we supported a client to connect with wisdom that is bigger than their ego? Because when we connect with a higher wisdom, with a spirit level wisdom, again, whether it's God or Buddha or intuition or whatever it is, we cultivate trust in the wisdom and in the matter at hand. And trust is an important factor, again, in supporting clients to move forward, to take action, right? To move beyond fears, whatever it is that we're working on. And then the fourth level of learning and processing that I name is the body level or the somatic level. Not so different than the heart level, but I call it differently because this is any feeling that you can, how does your body feel in this moment, right? Or where in your body are you holding this fear? Or where does your courage live inside of you? Or the client just had an opening. How does that feel in your body, right? Supporting clients to understand how they feel in their body or to make a body memory of a new energy, a new vision, a new feeling, a new pattern. Okay, that was a lot of information. Very quick. I'm going to pause here and see thoughts. What are the four levels sparking for you? What is it helping you see? What are you noticing? And Danielle shared in the chat on the last group of questions on the visioning. You heard someone say last week, we can only manifest or create as far as our imagination is willing to go. I love that. And that makes such a good case for visioning questions. Catherine.
Yeah. Can you speak for a moment about why body is level number four?
So I'm ordering them not linearly. they can come in any order. But what I will say, and this might be a stylistic thing for me, so I mean, nothing that I say is the truth with a capital T, but I'll just toss this. While those can happen in any order, and like I said, you don't have to hit all four in any session because you might drive you a little like nuts to do that. I do most of the time like to hit the cognitive level first. So that, because there's oftentimes like safety, it creates a more solid container if a client can connect some dots intellectually or cognitively. But then from there, I might go to any of the other levels in any order. Is that helpful? Yeah, good. Victoria.
And I wanted to just circle back to what came up with visioning. I think so often, like the word visioning seems like a really big word, you know, like vision boards and this grand big vision. But like this, I think the reason why I wanted to circle back to it is to like bring it in like a smaller scale and just like if a client feels safe enough, like playing with perspectives or like trying something on for size or something like something very tangible, small.
Yes, there is. I'm so glad you're bringing it in. Absolutely. So like, there's the big vision. What do you want your business to look like? What do you want your relationship to look like? Right. But then there's the, I love that you're saying playing or different perspective, or even the question of how do you want that conversation with your sister to go?
Yeah.
Right. That is a visioning question. And it's so important, you know, especially if there's a history or a pattern of not speaking one's truth with their sister or not upholding that, right? Whatever it is, that's just a little visioning question like that can go so far.
And I think too, now that I'm feeling into it here, I feel like the receptivity to do that is almost like an invitation of a pause, like almost like, let's pause here. Like this is outside of like real world. No one's going to hold you to this, but like what, like if we could just do this for a moment and play with this there, it's got more wiggle room there to do it.
I love it. I love that you're sharing that you're having that awareness and it plugs in. I'm trying not to geek out too much here. I think, you know, I have a love of the seasons and the four phases. And that plugs in so much to the wisdom of the seasons and the phases, because when do we dream most of the time? At night, in the dark, where it's not yet the day where we have to take this decisive action or we have to be so serious about it, right? But it's like in the dark, there are no boundaries. We can play, we can be in that pause, in that winter, you know, and just start to play with it, right? And then decide, okay, which of those things land? Which of those do I want to pursue? And then go from there. Thank you. All right, Dawn is saying in the chat, I love the option of having layers if and when clients feel stuck with cognitive reasoning. I'm so glad you're bringing that into the conversation, Dawn. It is absolutely another reason to not only stay on the cognitive, and it's so, I'm so glad you're saying it. If a client gets stuck in a cognitive question, ask them a feeling question, ask them how their heart feels about this, or what they feel in their body, or what would the universe want them to know about it. It can help them get unstuck, absolutely. And Kathy is saying, I feel that these four levels of learning and processing are going to really up-level my coaching. Yes, it seems like it will be simple to bring them in. Yeah, I'm so, so glad. Okay, good. So the reason why I brought the four levels in now is because let's look at category of questions that I call feeling questions. And these can be the heart level and also the body level. Like I said, the heart and the body level sometimes crisscross categories. So you want to use a feeling question, maybe after a series of cognitive level questions. or maybe when you feel that you sense that a client needs to connect more deeply than just the cognitive level. I love what Dawn said, when a client is stuck, you might want to use a feeling question. When you sense that like a client is talking, but there's no emotional resonance with what they're talking, they're like talking about the situation, but they're not, you sense they're maybe not connected to what they're saying. So here are some of many different examples. How would that feel, right? Let's say you've just asked some visioning questions, or a visioning question, or a client brings up they'd like to set X boundary or whatever it is. How would that feel, right? Not what do you think about that, but how would that feel? This next question is a question that I use often. How do you feel in your body right now? Or how do you feel in your body as you describe that, right? If I sense that there's a feeling that wants to come through, that's important for the client to be in or be aware of, either because it's disgust or excitement and joy or expansion or confidence, right? Whatever it is, how are you feeling in your body right now? It can oftentimes just help drop things down in such a deeper way. What does your heart want to tell you about this? Right. And sometimes I may even ask a client to place a hand on their heart, connect in. What does your heart have to say about this? It'll give them something a little bit different than just like, what do you think about this situation? What do you notice about the tone of your voice? Right. That can be a great question if an emotion is coming up and a client isn't aware of it. This is an interesting kind of feeling question that's also a cognitive level question. What's an image or a metaphor that reflects X, right? Whatever the client just said. What's an image? What image comes to mind for you when you think about asking for a raise, right? Or what image comes to mind for you when, as you consider going on that date, or right, whatever it is? What would feel exciting here, or inspiring, or whatever a value that that client holds? Here's another category, motivation questions. So when your clients are aware of their motivation, it's easier for them to move forward. Similar to the question that Marlo was asking before about, right, a client wanting to know the intention of a question. That's the motivation here. So you want to ask motivation questions when you sense a client needs motivation, or a bigger reason, or a mission, or inspiration in order to move forward. Because of all of that, I associate motivation questions with the spirit level of learning and processing, right? Because remember that higher wisdom that you can trust in, that's motivating, that's inspiring, right? So some examples, and we spoke about, I'm sorry, I just turned the light on in here. Bruce asked last week about the question why. So it's a stylistic choice. You may not want to ask the why question, but I like in some moments to ask, right, why? Why is that important to you? I also like to ask a different kind of why question here. What's your deep why? Right. So if a client is talking about wanting something, what's your deep why on this? Here's another type of motivation question. What about that excites you? what value would this experience have for you, right? Because understanding the value creates the motivation, or it's like, oh, wait, no, there is no value, right? And then you're not motivated, which is great. Then it brings that kind of clarity. Any of these questions, by the way, can also bring the clarity of this isn't aligned and I am not inspired by this. And that was like an extra should or whatever it is. Here's another motivation question. Why would spirit be asking you to do this, right? And spirit can be interchangeable with whatever language resonates for the client. Why would your higher wisdom be asking you to do this? Why would your heart be asking you to do this, right? Whatever it is. Or what's the higher reason here? All right, let me pause here. Jessica is saying in the chat, getting to the deep why many times requires the client to revisit the same question multiple times to have a chance to get deeper and deep with themselves. Absolutely. And I think it's in the handout. One of the things that I invite everyone to think about is with the, sometimes it can be helpful to actually to say like, what's the deep why, or and then ask the next question. Now, what's the deep why behind that? Or what's the reason underneath that? And then maybe even ask it again. Kavita is saying, can you describe again parameters around when to not ask why questions and when it's helpful? I think I ask too many why questions. So I would say really it's coaching the what based on the who on that. It's a good question. And it's all, I think it's about reading the energy. So sometimes a why question is absolutely appropriate and can help a client get to the deeper motivation. But if a client is maybe feeling a little bit defensive about what they've just said, or if they've come into the session, maybe not totally regulated, or if you just know historically they don't like that question, or even if you just sense in the moment that it's gonna feel confrontational, not in a productive way, but in a shaming way, then I would try to find other words. You know, maybe use another question that I have in this category. Do you somehow find a way to point to the defensiveness in a productive way? Again, depends on the situation. And that's I would call if it's aligned to do that, then we're in resistance territory. And I hate to keep on saying, wait till we get to the resistance archetypes, but there's so much to say on that topic. We've got 3 hours worth of it, I think so. For now I'll say, just the simplest thing I can say about it for now is if you feel like your client is in the right place, you can say, you know, I notice, tell me if I'm getting this right. I noticed that question, brought up some things for you, and that's great. We don't have to answer that question, but I'm wondering what about it is making you feel uncomfortable. Or, you know, again, you have to choose words, because even that, depending on the client, right? They might be, I'm not uncomfortable, right? So you kind of have to work it situation by situation. But I guess the last thing I'll say on this for now is I might in a particular moment back off if I ask a client something and it's not the right moment, and I can see that it's like, it's defensiveness. But if it happens around the same topic over a number of sessions, I really feel that it is my responsibility as the practitioner in a very loving and respectful and like fully compassionate way to bring awareness to that pattern of defensiveness with my willingness to be wrong about it and see if my client is up for a conversation about it. Okay. Amy's saying, I like the why question that can clarify and reveal true intention and desire, especially if it reflects client values. Yes, good. Kavita, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Any other thoughts or questions on feeling or motivation questions? Anything that's popping for you that you want to share? Catherine.
I don't know if this will come up at another time, but I'm sort of wondering about like orders of the questions. Like, does sort of motivation question, you know, kind of clear, like it almost feels like these are somewhat in order of just like the clarifying questions, like, am I understanding what you're saying? Like sort of where are things now? Like, do you tend to have more of one type of question towards the beginning, or is it helpful sort of like for unpacking what it is that we're looking to do in a specific session or in a series of sessions? Is there sort of a preliminary opening? I don't need to keep that. I think you understand my question.
It's such a great question. And I fear I'm going to disappoint you because in sacred depths, there's no formulas, and it's on purpose like that, so that we're really fully present and listening and meeting the client in every moment. So I wish I could say do this and then this and then this and then this, but then you wouldn't be coaching the what based on the who, and you wouldn't be fully present in the moment. What I can give, which hopefully will be a little helpful, is I do try to, I mean, obviously a clarifying question can come up anytime in the session, but I do like to help both me and my client understand as many details of the situation that are relevant as possible from the get-go. So, and then kind of the other questions go from there. So I like I said earlier, the cognitive level and the understanding the situation do usually come first. And then that's what I love about coaching. And then it can go any way from there.
Yeah. And I think I'm actually sort of getting past the, like, what's the formula, which I know has been my question in the past. And I think some of it just be sort of sitting with the questions and playing with them, but I guess I think my sort of question is like, what kind of, like, what are feeling questions good for versus visioning questions good for? But I think the question is kind of still formulating. But yeah, it's definitely like, not like a, what's the first thing you ask, the second and third, but I think we'll get a little bit more into it with experience.
That's what I was going to say. So for sure, play. And also, I've been sharing it here, but you have it on your handout. For each one, I have a, like, when to use this, right? So for example, feeling question, when you're listening to a client and they've just said something and you sense that it would be helpful for them to feel more in that moment, right? To feel the emotion of it or to feel how it feels in their body or to pause on that and really kind of be with how does that feel? That's when you want to ask a feeling question. I know I'm sharing it quick as we go through now, but it's all written also in the worksheet.
Yeah, I have that worksheet up. So I'm sort of looking at that too. But anyway, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. And then I know I wish there was another way, but it really is practice. It's just practice and playing and assessing afterwards. I've mentioned this so many times over the weeks, but I can't mention enough, like, a great learning and mastery tool is after sessions. And this is part of what you're doing in your partner practice sessions, is to look afterwards, which questions worked really well? Why did they work? What could I have asked differently? But doing that is so valuable and helps build the muscle. Bruce.
Yeah. So what was coming up for me as, you know, as Catherine's asking that question too, and I was thinking about it as you were laying all those out as well. And I was just kind of feeling into that. So I have an intro call. It's like the first session call this afternoon, which, you know, often have putting goals together. What are your values? What are you kind of moving towards? And I feel like there is a little bit of a string there because I do have to build rapport, right? I'm not going to necessarily go into feeling questions right away because I think people need to feel safe. And they're not going to open their heart to me, especially I work with men as well, but you know, women, even women, doesn't matter. If they don't trust me or feel safe, they may not necessarily share with me what their heart desire is in the first session, or, you know, or even for a lot of people getting into their body, like just even knowing what they're feeling. And I feel like there's a, like some of those clarifying questions in the beginning, just to open that rapport and allow for that connection and opening that space up and creating a safe container is really important, because I've chased, honestly, clients, men away by going too deep, too fast. Like they're not ready. I don't want to feel like that. You know, I see, you know, their eyes have welled up, and then, you know, they don't come back because it's too, you know, it's too fast and they don't feel safe yet.
So. Yeah, it's such a great point. And it, again, I think it comes back to the coaching, the what based on the who. It sounds like you know your ideal client very well and how the container needs to be built and fostered before you get into certain topics or certain types of questions. And so, yes, like if you know that's who your ideal client is, absolutely. I would say also, just for everyone, the first session, if there is a formula, the first session maybe is the place of, you know, some particular questions, and we'll get to that a little later in the program. But that being said, I think it depends on the who and who the ideal client is. And this might not be an appropriate toss, Bruce, so you can tell me, or like little challenge. I would challenge you to trust yourself and know that truth, and also see if there are like little holes to poke or where that's not always true, if that's helpful.
Well, I love poking at those holes sometimes. It's just like, is it, what's going to happen when I do this? But then sometimes I lose people because, and that's okay as well. They're just not ready.
Yeah. Yeah. And so use your wisdom. You know your ideal client best, but I also just, I think I'm saying it because I also don't want you to hold back in a moment where you're sensing you could.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. Thanks.
Good. Tracy, the coaching, the what based on the who, is very simple. It's basically that there's no kind of canned, this is the situation, right? The situation might be a client is looking for a new job, or a client wants to get out of a relationship or start a new habit. We'll call that the what, that there's no canned questions or ways that something should go. Because of a situation, we always want to be listening to the who this client is in general, who they are in the moment, and then asking our questions, making our reflections, not only based on that situation, but based on the who that is in front of us. As opposed to, like you see out there, here are the 5 questions to ask someone who wants to get out of a relationship, right? That's the what. We're not going for that kind of canned process. Okay. Jen is asking, are these questions a combo of my own creations and what you found on the 50s best? Absolutely. Yes, these categories are just from all my years of experience. And because I'm a Virgo, I like to put things into categories. And also I did learn from those lists. Absolutely. Okay, this next category is an underutilized one that is one of my favorites, and I call it percentage or number questions. Percentage or number questions. And you wanna think about using a percentage or a number question when you sense a client could use support distinguishing story from reality. When a client is unclear maybe about their truth, or when a client is having a lot of confusion about a particular situation. Or if a client has just shared something with you and you sense it's not quite their truth, that there's maybe a misalignment there between what they shared and how they're actually feeling or what the situation may actually be. So to say it another way, sometimes in some situations, a percentage or number question can kind of like a sword cut through the bull and help a client see what is, because it's about numbers, right? It's like there's some fact there. So as an example, on a scale of 1 to 10, how true is that statement, right? Whatever they just said, right? How true is it that your kids hate you all the time, right? On a scale, right? So if a client is going on and on about how their kids hate them, they're a terrible parent, right? All the things, they're caught up in the blob of like, this is just the truth, right? But asking on a scale of 1 to 10, how true or how often is that true? It helps to begin to sift the story from the reality there. Here's another example. What percentage of your friends are actually not thinking about your best interest, right? Let's say a client says, oh, none of my friends have my best interest in mind. They're all crap friends. And you know that this client has shared in the past beautiful stories of friends really coming through for them, right? So you can ask what percentage as an example. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you really want to apply for that job, right? Let's say a client is talking about applying for a job and you're hearing them, but you're not hearing either the excitement in their voice or the way they're describing it. You see that that job is a mismatch maybe with their values, right? You could also ask a values question. How does this job line up with your values? But on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you actually want to have this job, to apply for this job? The number of questions, you don't want to over ask them, but asked in the right moments can really help a client see things a little bit more as they are sometimes. All right, you have on your sheet, I'm not gonna get too much into uncovering the obstacle questions, because we're gonna do a lot and befriend your fear and rewiring negative thought patterns. We're gonna go deep into obstacles. But so what I will say for, and some sequences too. So you will get some sequences there. But what I will say for now is if a client is having an obstacle, if something is standing in their way of what they want, you want to think about asking and uncovering the obstacle question, right? What's standing in your way? What's challenging here? What fear comes up for you? One of my favorite questions is, what's at risk for you? I love this question when I sense a fear is coming up for a client, right? What would be at risk for you? What object or belief or identity, self-identity or relationship would you be risking if you were to really pursue this? It can oftentimes really help create clarity on why someone is having trouble moving forward. I have here in this section the following question. Pretend you know the answer, what would it be? So that's if the obstacle is like, I don't know, right? Sometimes it's like, let's play, right? Like, get this right. Pretend you know the answer, what could it be? Sometimes that'll just piss the client off, but a lot of the time it will be helpful. So you always coach the what based on the. We are also going to get deep into strategizing questions. We'll have our own separate class for strategizing. But for now, I'll just share. Usually I don't strategize until towards the end of a session. Because first I kind of want to get deep into the issues, and you know, not always, but generally I usually don't start strategizing until at least halfway through. But I always like for a client to come out of a session with at least one action step. I think that is, for me, that is one of the core pieces of coaching, is that there, you know, and it doesn't have to be an outer action, it can be an inner action as well, but to move forward towards goals. So what would you like to do differently? What can you change about this right away? What is a step you want to take this week? How do you plan to achieve that, right? So something that supports a client to think about, what are they going to do? Or it can be, what are they going to write about or meditate on too? It doesn't have to be some big grand, get a website, right? But in between sessions, because the work that we do with clients is not, as we've looked at, is not just about what happens in sessions. It is about the container, right? We're holding a bigger container and what's happening in between sessions as well. All right, let's see how many more of these we can get through. Getting support questions. If you are someone who generally doesn't think to ask for support yourself, you might inadvertently not be noticing when a client in a certain situation where it'd be helpful to create awareness around getting more support, right? So always check your filters on things. When you sense that a client is overwhelmed or taking on too much, or maybe with the current resources that they have, they probably can't get the thing done that they want to get done. You want to ask a getting support question, right? Who can help you with this? What can you delegate? What other information do you need to gather? Who can you gather that from? What request can you make? If a client is hesitant about asking for support, right? So many of us have things around that. Sometimes a helpful question is, if you knew that they'd say yes, who would you ask for help on this? Right? So that's actually a visioning question, right? It's like, we're not going to go until you're going to do this yet, but let's look at vision. Like, if you could vision, if you knew for sure they would say yes, who would be best to ask help on this? All right. Jen, I didn't go into all of the, as I was saying before, into all of the obstacle questions, because we're gonna get so deep into all of those. So I just kind of lightly spoke about it now, but yes, you have those examples for you. Simplifying questions. So sometimes it can be really valuable to help a client simplify. And you want to use a simplifying question when a client is overwhelmed unhappy with a current situation, when it feels like they have too much to do or too much on their plate. So you want to help them simplify, right? What can you say no to? What are you tolerating in your life right now that you can actually let go of? What about this situation can you simplify? I often say that to clients, like when they're putting together programs and like, all, you know, it's like overcomplicated, you do this and that, and then it's going to be a 10-step marketing plan. What can you simplify here? What's no longer serving, or what's no longer aligned? Or what's the priority? Or what's the priority for this week, right? You have these six things that you know you really want to do. What is the priority right now? Okay, integration questions. So you want to ask an integration question after a lot has just been spoken. We spoke about this a little bit in our creating awareness module. So after a lot has just been shared, or a lot of awareness has just been created, or there's a lot of different strands or threads that have come to the surface, you don't want to just keep on going, right? So similar with this call, even I said, I'm going to be sharing a lot of content, but I'm pausing every now and again to ask, what are the questions? What are you seeing, right? To help you integrate a little bit the last section of what we looked at. So you want to be thinking about that in a session too. It is not a sprint to get as many breakthroughs and as many new awarenesses and as many ideas by the end of the session. Slower is often better. Slower is often better, because it's not just about what gets said in a session or spoken or understood intellectually, but is a client integrating? Are they embodying? Are they taking it in? Right? So we do want to pause with integration questions. What's most important about this? What are you seeing for yourself so far in the conversation that's really resonating? What are you learning so far? Right? And then, as we've spoken about, for sure, at the end of a session, I always leave a couple of minutes for final integration of the session. What are you taking away? Or have been some of the most important pieces? Sometimes I'll ask that question if we have come up with a lot of strategy in a session. I might ask the question like this. I know you've got your list of action steps that you're taking with you. On a deeper level, on an inner level, what have you really seen from this session? What are you taking away, right? So the client just doesn't just regurgitate the action steps, but they're kind of integrating some of the deeper pieces that they're seeing for themselves. All right, let me pause here. Any questions? I have time for one, because I want to get through a few more before we wrap. But any questions on integration questions, simplifying, getting support questions, or anything that you're seeing that you want to share? Jen.
Loving this. Yeah, the integration questions, I do this myself with my clients with the biggest takeaways, which has been super helpful. And I'm sure I learned that through you, but through other practitioners that took your course. So it's so cool. I'm like, oh yeah. Sometimes I'll go over time because I think this is so important. So I'm learning as a rule to try to give about 10 minutes for this part of action steps and takeaways. Maybe like 8 minutes is usually my sweet spot. Do you have anything to say about that on timing?
Yeah, I mean, I think with those two together, action steps and takeaways, you know, if you haven't gotten to the action steps by 8 minutes before, it's a good moment to shift to that. Takeaways don't need to take more than 2 minutes sometimes. You know, they don't have to be long and drawn out. Sometimes they want to be, you know, but I would say for sure, if you've got 8 to 10 minutes left in a session, you want to start thinking about that and pivoting that way.
Something I've noticed I do is they'll share a takeaway and then we kind of start unpacking the takeaway.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to take more than 2 minutes. Like they, you know, if you just can't help yourself because you think there's something in there, then here's what I want to toss to you to consider. Reflect back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Validate. And then formulate a journaling question. So you know, I think based on that, it would be really awesome for you to do journaling on this. How does that feel for you? Right? If you just really can't help yourself.
I often can't. I think
I get it.
I bolded and capitalized as slower is often better. I tend to want to have them get these transformations every session. And just, I think I might be giving them too much.
Yeah, too much can actually hold someone back from the real change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Okay. Okay, great. We spoke about yes or no questions last week, so I won't go back over that again. Important to mention interruption questions. I know sometimes practitioners can feel scared, like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna offend if I interrupt, right? And I always like to give permission to practitioners, right? Of course, how we do it, the energy with which we do anything is so important. We wanna do it with respect and with love. You know, and all of that, but there are moments to interrupt a client, right? If they are talking a lot and they haven't been getting to the point, or if they're distracting themselves with details or unimportant threads, or right, getting off track, it is actually our responsibility to have a pause, to respectfully interrupt, and to get them on track, right? So I might preempt the question with, you know, I want to pause you here for a moment because there's a lot that's been said. And then I might ask the question, right? What is the essence of what you've been saying, or what feels most important about what you're saying? Or I sense that you're beating around the bush. What are you avoiding here, right? If it's a moment for that. Every now and again, I might ask a question like that and a client will come back with, I know I'm giving you a lot of details, but it feels really important to get all of these details out to you. And that's great, right? Like you've done your job in kind of pausing, saying there's a lot going on, right? But if a client wants to share those details and it's not an avoidance thing, you go with what the client's truth on that. Okay, this next category aren't exactly questions. They're more invitations. I call them challenge questions. You want to use this in a moment when you sense a client is ready to stretch beyond their perceived limitations. When you sense it's the right moment to lovingly push a client beyond what they think is possible. And oftentimes it can involve measurable action, right? So I did that a little bit with Bruce a few minutes ago. I kind of gave him a little bit of a challenge. So some examples are, I challenge you to generate 3 sales calls this week. How does that land for you, right? So I don't just end it with a challenge. I'm asking the client if it's aligned for them, if that feels like something valuable, right? How does that land for you? I challenge you to stop complaining for a full week. What do you think? I have tried that, by the way. It's for me personally, very hard. I challenge you to reduce your expenses this month. How would that feel? I sense that that's actually too easy for you. How can you go further? A client can accept the challenge, decline the challenge, or negotiate the challenge. All is good, right? The trick with the challenge is to make it motivating, but also not shameful if the client isn't up for it. And as with everything, willing to be wrong if that wasn't the aligned challenge for that client. All right, I think I'll go over one other. I think the hardest one is the confrontational questions. So let's look at that. When I say the hardest, I mean, they're all pretty self-explanatory, but I know that confrontation can also bring up fear for practitioners. So it's good for us to talk that one out for a minute or two also. Sometimes it can be valuable to ask a confrontational question. Always with love and respect and compassion and all the things. And only if a client is regulated, right? If the container is strong and tight, if the client is up for it. A confrontational question can be really helpful. In a moment to help clients jump over, like if the confrontation is going to help a client jump over the block, right? If that like loving, bold fierceness is going to change, like punctuate the pattern for them and just help them get over the hump. So some examples of this are, what if what you just shared was actually not true at all? And again, you know, everybody has their own style and their own type of ideal client. So these, not all of these might be right for you or your client. For me, this next one, because I have a little bit of a potty mouth, I feel like I want to call BS on what you just said. What do you think about that? Right now, I'm not going to do that in a first session with a client. The container has to be really, again, right? The container has to be tight. There has to be the trust. I have to know the client is in the right place for it. I'm going to say it in a playful and loving way, right? I feel like I want to call BS on that when, you know, when you think, but sometimes it'll just like snap a client into like, oh, you're right. I'm just being so hard on myself about that situation right now, right? Whatever it is. And then sometimes the confrontational question is a little bit like when we looked at reflecting hard truths. It's just something a little harder for a client, right? How have you been clinging on to this relationship to keep you safe? This is a yes or no question, which I said, you know, use sparingly, but is it possible that the relationship is wrong for you? Right? Okay. So for this week, continue to focus on your questioning skills. When you're working with clients, set the intention to ask mostly open-ended questions versus yes or no questions. Challenge yourself with that. Take a moment to pause before asking questions to think about how you want to ask your question and what is the intention and why are you asking it. It's okay to take a little time before you ask. And as I said earlier, if it's helpful for you, keep a list of coaching questions in front of you and refer to them. If you're working with a coaching partner in this program, in the reflection section of the conversation, reflect on the questions that were asked in the session, which ones worked, worked? Why did they work? Which ones could be tweaked, right? How can you tweak them? And you can even look together with your partner at the list of questions that I provide and see, like, which of these questions could have been asked in the session and why, right? So get a little bit more into that. It's too, we're at time. If you can hang on for a minute or two, regardless of even if you have to go right now, please write down what are you taking away from our session today. And if you can hang on for a minute or two, I'd love to hear a takeaway or two or any questions that you have. And if not, I'll see you next week. Anyone want to share takeaways or any questions that you have? What are you taking from our session? What are you seeing? Or what are you worried about? Juniper.
Sorry, I'm not camera ready at all today.
Okay, I get it.
I just wanted to share briefly that I appreciated your pre-framing that we would be stressed out if we wanted to immediately do all of these questions, because I did find myself being like, oh my God, these are so good. How am I going to remember this? And the pre-framing helped. So that's good. Just my little takeaway reflection today.
I'm so glad. And you just like, you just gave an underscore for the importance of pre-framing too. So yay. Yes, I've taught this so many times. And the first two or three times I didn't pre-frame, and I learned very quickly that I needed to. And you know what I would just say is for Juniper and everyone, enjoy this, right? Don't put the pressure on yourself now, right? To even in the next week, get all of it. Have fun with this. Like, there's so much creativity in this. Like I said earlier, pick one or two to play with and to see how it goes. This is mastery happens over time. It just does. Helen.
Also not camera appropriate today, but my biggest takeaway is just how invaluable questions can be to making it a co-creative process, and how just the simple act of asking questions can take us out of our own bias and our own limited subjective experience, and just really it kind of alleviates the anxiety, because it's like no matter what comes up, no matter how lost or stuck or limited we feel from our own perception, if we just ask the right question, we can open up a new channel to go deeper with the client. And so it just like takes away, it's liberating somehow.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you're sharing all of this, Helen. Big yes to everything that you're saying. And what you're just sharing reminded me of something that I don't usually share in this class, but I'll just share it. Sometimes if we're stuck, because it's a co-creation, sometimes if we as practitioners are stuck on what question should I ask next, sometimes I'll ask my client, I'll say, what question do you think I should ask next here, right? Or let's come up with a question together. So it really is always a co-creation. Jen.
Yeah, I feel myself printing this out and, you know, I don't want to use the word studying, but playing with it. What popped into my head after Juniper's share was like, these are ice cream flavors. Our ice cream arsenal just got so much bigger. And I really like how you, you broke it down into sections. That's really lovely and organized. Thank you, Virgo. I have a Virgo moon, so I love it. Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, we're using like oil paints that just, we got so many different colors now. So yeah, I'm excited.
Good. I'm so glad. I can't wait to hear how it goes. Susan, did you have your hand raised? Did you want to ask something or share something?
Thank you. So there was a lot of hubbaloo outside my door, so I wanted to check on that first. But yes, I just wanted to say I love your categories, because I've had, you know, different trainings where I got like, you know, powerful questions, but I always felt a little lost about when and where to use some of them. And these are just really just make sense to me, which is probably why I was drawn to your training. But I had a really quick question about when you have an intention for a question, but at the same time, you're not necessarily leading, Is it just that fine line of not being attached to the outcome of what the client says? But it can be a little leading, I guess, but because you're kind of trying to create awareness, but you're just asking and like,
I'm so glad you're asking. Yes. So it's, what I would say is it's a balance, right? Because when I say their intention for the question, I'm never looking for a particular answer. Every now and again, it might be, right? Every now and again, it might be. But for the most part, when I say what's the intention for the question is how does this plug in to either the client's goals for this session or their bigger goals, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then just because I always have to have more than one answer to every question, I'll just share this. Sometimes when I know I am asking a question that is a little more leading than it should be, but I still really want to ask the question, I will actually just say that to my client. Mm-hmm. I will say, this question is probably leading, right? And so just call me out but I'm really compelled to ask it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll do that, or sometimes every now and again, like very sparingly, but if it's right, sometimes I'll say, I'm going to ask you a question, but I want to tell you my intention for the question first.
Ooh.
And then I'll ask the question. If I feel like the client might be like, huh? You know, like what? And Marla, that might be helpful for you too, with some of the resistance, not a lot, really, so sparingly. But every now and again, I'll say, okay, I want to tell you, right? And I might even ask, like, is it okay? Is that intention okay? Here's the question, right? I'm a big fan, as I've said before, of like, if it's coming up for me in my mind, I'm usually going to share it in one way with my client.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Jen.
Yeah. You brought up the leading questioning again. And I mentioned, I think last time that like I do that. And I noticed, you know, in between this call and last call, like, yeah, I'm still doing it. I'm being more gentle about it. I'm even letting them know, like, this might be a leading question, or I recognize I'm leading you, but they'll be like, no, lead me. They like it. And I know it's
because the client wants it doesn't mean that, right? So
give it to me doing it, like, because it's hard for me to break out of this. And like, why is it so bad to lead them?
It's not bad, right? Okay. So we're not looking at anything in terms of good or bad. We always want to ask, is this helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I was saying is just because a client, right? So a client might, because of their patterning, just want to be led or just be told the answer or led directly to the solution. But that doesn't mean that that's what's helpful for them. Again, it is, right? Which is why every rule is meant to be broken. And I do ask leading questions sometimes, and right. And I'll share it's leading. But what I would say is for you, you know, ask yourself, is this question really in service of the client? Or is there a way for me to open up this question so that it's not leading so much as guiding? I don't know if that's helpful. I would still, after your sessions, go back. I'd write down some questions you're asking during sessions and go back and assess them and see how you could rework some of them to be less leading, just to practice. And again, don't beat yourself up if you ask leading questions. It may have been exactly what was help needed in that moment. But I do want you to be asking the question, was that helpful? You know, and am I trusting my client enough when I ask leading questions? Is that helpful?
Yeah. Yes. And it's still not getting to it. Cause like, cause I'm talking about, these are like clients I've worked with for almost 2 years now, a year and a half. And so I see these patterns and I want to uncover the patterns for them.
Can you give an example of a leading question?
It's kind of hard because it's definitely an art. But I'll see like a little pathway of questions down to the heart of the issue. Mm-hmm. And so I'll kind of like keep bringing them along to get to this heart of it. But sometimes they don't know
exactly. That's not necessarily leading
in okay.
a helpful way.
I think it's guiding, but.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, if you can capture some of it and give examples.
Yeah, like.
Another call, we can, I think it would be a great little case study for us okay. all to look at together. So if you happen to, or anyone here, you know, if you happen to, let's look at some case studies for sure. But what you're describing doesn't necessarily sound leading.
Yeah. For instance, like if I want them to find forgiveness, and really the truth of it is forgiving themselves, mm-hmm. right? But we're like up here, and this is like where the forgiveness piece is. Like, but I'll see it up here. Like I start to ask different questions about, you know, well, what's deeper there? And I'm asking them for them to get to it. But I know that I'm leading them to finally realize they need to forgive.
Oh, okay, so that is not, when we looked at leading questions last week, uh-huh. that what you're talking about makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Specifically, how we looked at leading questions would be asking a client, and this is if you do this often, right? Every now and again, it's going to come up. But if you say to a client, do you think you procrastinate too much?
Oh, okay.
Versus first asking clarifying questions about the situation, asking what the obstacle is about not being able to get things done, looking at the fear, right? And then the procrastination. But if it's just straight out the gate of like, do you think you're procrastinating too much? Or do you think you should work less? Or it's like leading the client straight to a solution.
Oh, okay. What a relief. So I'm like, no, this is like what I do.
Then, oh yeah, of course we're guiding. It's if we have, if the leading, the way that we looked at leading questions, is if we've decided in our mind that this is the problem or this is the solution, and we ask a very pointed question that leaves no margin for like much outside of it.
Okay.
We're leading a client to a solution.
Yeah,
particular understanding. That's what a leading is. So
that's yeah, that's landing. I can be like, I don't need to like hold on to the thing, and I can just like use it as a rough outline. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Marla and Bruce, I'm going to take your questions. I'm just going to turn the recording off so the recording doesn't get too long.